I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guest today is Ohio's Tax Commissioner, Joe Testa. Commissioner Testa, recently there's been some discussion in the media about certain things within not only your department, but other departments in Ohio, and that the attitude within the department heads in Columbus have changed. Very much more customer-oriented, business-focused, help businesses, help people. What's your take?
In the area in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area, may have seen in the Enquirer recently an article that focused on the tax department and then the conclusion of Inspector General's report, which speaks clearly to this, is that the tax department historically had in the business tax area not been very assertive about contacting taxpayers, business taxpayers, that they had overpayments of their taxes. They would overpay in sales tax or CAT tax or whatever, and the department for some reason just let those sit there in those accounts for years and amassed tens of thousands of accounts, tens of millions of dollars. And I was just frankly shocked at how unbusiness friendly all of that really was. And yes, we have changed it. We're turning that corner. We're not only now in the process of getting the refunds back to the businesses as they are entitled, because it's their money, it's not government's money, but in addition to that is again trying to change that culture. How can we possibly be business friendly and withhold their refunds from them because they didn't submit the right form at the right time? And that is just not business friendly. And it was an undercurrent. I mean, we found it in several different tax types, business tax types. So it isn't just one small little group of folks that within the department. It didn't permit the entire department, but it was very large.
So what are you doing to make sure those kinds of things don't happen?
First of all, of course, changing the culture. You know, as soon as this occurred, as soon as it became clear what we had to deal with, we had, initiated new policies, obviously, that, we don't do business that way, not in this administration. We have set new policies in place, new procedures in place for these kind of things to happen, to take place. The ways in which monies move from one account to another, which was sort of brought this whole thing to the surface to begin with, was an incident that requires two signatures, requires a supervisor's approval so that nobody can do things inappropriately. The website, the gateway, we've made some changes in the business gateway regarding CAT tax. You may have seen that. We've already made those changes. So there's more to be done here. In addition to technology and the policies and procedures, it is sort of also a cultural thing, is that, this is not the government's money. This is the taxpayer's money. That's the line we have to eventually cross. And we have a lot of great people who do think that
way.
You know, it's just this undercurrent, and it's just going to take a little time to get rid of that.
I really do appreciate that kind of attitude in terms of this whole business friendly.
First of all, it is the right thing to do. I mean, that's basically the bottom line. It's the right thing to do. It's good for businesses. It's good for Ohio. Again, if we want to create a climate in which businesses want to come here, grow here, create new jobs and so on, we have to have that kind of climate, and it's got to be more than just the tax rates themselves. That's important, and we're working on those too, as you know, but we've also got to be the way in which they're handled and treated.
We're going to continue our conversation tomorrow with Ohio Tax Commissioner Joe Testa. We're going to be talking about taxes, one of my favorite subjects, and some of the tax reduction strategies that's been implemented. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Ohio's Tax Commissioner Joe Testa. And recently, there's been a huge, massive tax bill that cut taxes by, $2.7 billion? That's a great news to so many different people. Maybe you can share some of the highlights.
Yes, we just got some readings from different entities who kind of follow these kinds of things, and it's the largest single tax cut this calendar year in the country.
That's fabulous.
$2.7 billion over the next 3 years. Yeah, it's a small business piece, which of course is very near and dear to your heart and your clients. Personal income tax reduction across the board, again, another 10% reduction. Why do we want to do this? Particularly the small business piece. Tax reform historically has been focused on larger businesses. Remember the personal property tax, manufacturing, that kind of stuff. This is a focus on small businesses, pass-throughs. Again, giving a reduction.
S-corps, LLCs, partnerships, many privately held and family businesses.
Yes, that's where we think a lot of help was needed. The governor is very adamant about this. We really need to do something for small business. So that's what we came up with. We capped a 50% reduction of your pass-through income up to a cap of $250,000. That it reduces the business this tax, if you will, that a pastor entity pays.
Yes, and for those that may not understand completely, what happens is when you are an owner of a pass-through entity, your business income is taxed on your personal tax return,
yes,
just like somebody's W-2 salary and wages.
Yes.
Whereas the largest corporations, C corporations in the state of Ohio, for example, and even smaller corporations that are C corporations, they don't pay any Ohio income tax. And
right,
so it just is counterintuitive to me that if the small businesses are where the jobs are, why not help them keep more of their money to grow their business?
Absolutely, yes. Your idea makes a lot of sense, and the governor recognizes that and subscribes to it, which is the reason why we took this step this with this budget. How much further we can go, you know, again, it's a balancing act for mm-hmm. the entire budget. That piece alone is $1.6 billion of that $2.7 is that small business piece. And that's the whole idea, that we believe that over 3 years, if we have $1.6 billion put back in the pockets of small business people, the LLCs, sole proprietorships, S-Corps, that these folks are going to grow their businesses, they're going to invest, they're going to buy more machinery, maybe hire another person, you know, so that is where the jobs are grown. That's where the private sector job growth takes place. That's what we want to incentivize. So we're very happy that we got that through. And the legislature strongly supported it, and Governor proudly signed it.
He sure did. And, you know, he's such an advocate of tax reduction. For example, the death tax, the estate tax, has completely been eliminated,
yes,
in Ohio.
Yes.
That was a very important component for him.
Yes, yes. This has been on his radar. It did, you know, finally got in the position where we had enough support in the House and the Senate to get it passed, and that is now gone as of this year. So it's one more step. It's one more piece of the overall tax reform that we want to accomplish.
The other thing that he's very much an advocate of is, I think, as a part of the overall tax bill that was passed, was just an overall tax reduction for individuals, every individual.
Yes, yes. The personal income tax reduction, again, another 10% over 3 years, phased in over 3 years, is moving us in the right direction. We're still too high, Crystal. I mean, we are still too high. Our top marginal rate is still way too high. When you add municipal income tax and school district income tax, we have people paying 10, 11% in income tax in addition to the federal. And it's way too high. We've got to continue to push this down. First of all, for the citizens who live here, but also, again, the small business people. You just mentioned it. I mean, that's how they pay their taxes, you know, not just as an individual, from a business person, too. We've got to continue to push those down. It's clearly a goal the governor is going to continue to focus on.
Well, Commissioner, I'm really glad to hear you seem to be very passionate about that as
absolutely,
well. So thank
absolutely.
You so much for being our guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, it's very sad that in today's environment, with everything going on economically, people who would never have thought about stealing all of a sudden can rationalize and justify why it's okay to steal from their employer.
The point, I think, is you really don't know whether someone's motivated economically to steal, because you usually don't know all their circumstances.
Generally, the person that you trust the most in your business, the person that has the most access, is the person that also has the greatest opportunity to steal from you. And most of these thefts are with privately held businesses, because they don't have the capacity, the internal resources, to diversify processes to minimize theft and fraud from happening.
Because we do fraud prevention work, I'm very attuned to the stories you read in the newspapers and on the internet about various cases where employees or trusted people in not-for-profit organizations steal funds. I mean, they're staggering amounts. People get away with hundreds of thousands of dollars from relatively small organizations. And it's all because it starts with trust, which is not a control, but unfortunately, in many cases, there's trust but no control.
And it's you, the business owner, that spent your entire life working to build your business. You don't want someone to come along and rob you blind. Not only does it damage your financial resources, but your credibility. The other unfortunate truth is that when people do steal, it's not like they go invest in blue chip stocks, right? You're never going to see that money again, most likely.
No, typically people that steal money have other issues, either gambling, drugs, alcohol. They're already in debt and they're paying that debt off, but they're not taking that money and investing it.
And usually what happens is fraud starts small. Could be as simple as a mistake, or maybe someone just tries to see if they can steal something, to see if it gets noticed. But then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until ultimately the person is over their head. They can't figure out how to change it, and they just go with it. Many times these things go unnoticed for years. So what can businesses do, privately held businesses, What can you do to minimize fraud from occurring to you? You can never prevent it, but you can take action to minimize it from happening.
In many cases, even in a very small business without a lot of people, you can put in enough controls to have pretty good assurance that your assets are being safeguarded.
One of the biggest deterrents that you can have is just having someone come in and take a look at your internal controls, your processes, to see how you can minimize fraud. If you were going to steal within your organization, how would you do it so that you can take steps to put processes in place?
And even if you think you have processes in place, chances are some of your systems have changed because of computerization, technology, and you probably don't have as good a processes as you thought you did.
And just having someone in there is like a deterrent. It's like when you're driving down the interstate and you see a policeman in the median, all of a sudden you slow down, don't you? Same thing happens in an organization when employees know that you have outsiders coming in, making sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. It deters them from committing fraud, or at least it minimizes that from occurring. So the key is just take a look at your business, take a look at your processes. You go out and ask for help. This is not an area where you want to make a mistake. And if you would like more information, feel free to give Tom or I a call at 513-768-6796, and we'll help you with some ideas on how you can minimize fraud from happening. And we can also send you a copy of an article that we recently wrote about ways to minimize fraud from occurring in your workplace. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mike Brown. Mike is a legal web marketing consultant with FindLaw. And Mike, I know that you work with large and small solo law firms here in Southwestern Ohio, Northern Kentucky, and you are an expert, really, in internet marketing.
In internet marketing,
yes.
That's right.
So even though you work primarily with law firms, these techniques span any kind of business.
The strategies go across the board as far as businesses wanting to effectively market their practices online.
What are some of the biggest mistakes that you find people who try to employ in internet marketing?
I think the biggest mistakes that they make is they try to focus on one aspect of a strategy versus the whole strategy. Some people put too much effort on search engine optimization and showing up number one for a search, and not enough effort or energy behind what happens when they get there. The goal you should have in mind is, what is my internet strategy? It's not about a website. It's not about just SEO. It's about a strategy. But the biggest thing is conversion. How do I get people to actually pick up the phone and call our business and come in and actually hire us? There are a lot of moving parts in an internet strategy today. So you have a website, content, search engine optimization, blog, video, social media, mobile. How do you look on a mobile device? And as far as people finding you, there are some people that have just moved in town that don't have a CPA firm. Mm-hmm. That would be very interested to find somebody that could help their business grow. And they might go to the web. They might ask two or three people, who do you know in a CPA area? And then they go look you up. So how do you look compared to them?
You're right. A lot of times, and I think a lot of people make this mistake too, that they use their website as like a brochure as opposed to more of an interactive customer acquisition site.
That's exactly right. And those sites typically have been around for 5+ years, and they haven't kept up. The internet is moving constantly.
How's video playing with all this? I mean, is that a meaningful way to...
It is. A lot of people will say, once somebody comes into our office, they'll hire us. They'll hire our business. Well, how do we get them in your office without getting them in your office? And video is how they get to meet you before they actually meet you. If they're comparing you to two other people, and you've got a video, and they hear you, Crystal Faulkner, talking about CPA and business strategies, that thing on the back of their neck stands up and says, this is the right person for me to hire. So that's where video is a game changer if you're trying to get hired.
I just think that a lot of, especially small businesses, they don't take enough time to really make sure that they are staying up to date on those kinds of technologies. And it's critical, because if they're not doing it, they're really losing steam, aren't they?
They're missing business that they should never miss. The low-hanging fruit are the referrals.
Is it economically practical to be able to keep current and devise a strategy, a marketing strategy that encompasses all these various modes that you just mentioned?
It is. You have to find somebody you can trust and make sure they put together a strategy for your business and it makes sense. But the customer, your customer should be the center of that strategy.
Well, Mike, this has been great information. If folks listening would like to learn more about some of these topics, get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
What's your website?
They can go to CincinnatiLawyerMarketing.com, and I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+.
Thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is John Dietrich. John, you've been very involved in maybe three of the biggest economic development projects that the city of Cincinnati has had in the last 15 years. What type of payback do you think the city, or really any city, should expect when they're doing these large capital development projects?
Well, I think the whole reason behind the streetcar project in many people's mind is economic development. What they mean by that is more businesses located on the route, more jobs within those businesses, capital accumulation by the owners, so they actually of the buildings, so they actually develop wealth, which is a big issue for the African American Chamber and the Hispanic Chamber. All of those things have happened in other cities around streetcar routes.
And are streetcars so popular for this type of thing because it's pretty easy to predict the route, because once you lay the rail, it's not going to change the route like a bus could do?
When you read the literature, it's fixed asset equals certainty equals people willing to add their investment in that area also.
But John, if you look at other cities that have used transportation, you mentioned streetcar, but a lot of these other cities who've really leveraged economic development in terms of transportation have done this as a regional approach to transportation, not just about a mile or so of a streetcar project going up and down the city of Cincinnati. I guess from an opponent's point of view, it seems like that as a city, even if you do believe that transportation is an economic development driver, the whole idea of a regional approach just seems like it could make a lot of sense.
A regional approach is always better if you can manage it. It's actually 3.6 miles, the Cincinnati project, 1.8 up and 1.8 back, linking the north extremity and the south extremity of the basin area in Cincinnati. But regionally, that was attempted in 2002 with Metro Moves, which failed. And I'm not smart enough to figure out why that failed, but sort of effort, I think, would certainly be worthwhile again, just given the congestion we have on the roadways. Single occupancy vehicle is not necessarily the best way to commute, and an interstate highway through a city is not necessarily the best way to ship freight.
And if you look at some of the other projects that you've been involved in, whether it be the banks or the Fort Washington Way project, which both are just spectacular, do you recall, was there some pushback, some opposition to those projects as well?
Well, with Fort Washington Way, we actually spent a fair amount of money and had a professional public relations agency help us through that. We did over 200 meetings between the environmental document being done and before we turned the first shovel of dirt. We did a video to explain to people how they were still going to be able to access downtown and the ball field and during the time of great, actually, disruption. We actually did some temporary exits from the interstate to kind of help people get in and get out.
When clearly the banks is another major success when it's now finally been constructed.
Well, again, I think it's all about team, and I don't think enough good can be said about Bob Castellini's ability to bring that team together finally, not just the Reds, but the bank's project team.
Thank you so much for being our guest, John, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Mike Sarrow and Matthew Dooley, and both of these gentlemen are co-founders of a company called Capture, and you guys are part of Centrifuge. Capture, the two of you partnering together, is like a match made in heaven, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need a lot of different skill sets in order to start something up. Where my title is a CEO and janitor, and you have to do all those things.
And Matthew, your role in co-founding this company, certainly you've been very involved, obviously, I would assume, in the marketing, the branding, there's something called Kickstarter that you all have partnered with. Maybe you can share how that's been going and what that's been like.
Sure. Yeah, we just came out of a successful Kickstarter campaign where we raised over $150,000, which is a pretty significant mark when it comes to all the projects that have tried to raise money through that platform since 2009 when it launched. And we're recovering a little bit. A lot of effort went into that process, and I was able to leverage my marketing skills and my social media expertise and combining that with Mike's experience. We were really able to rally a crowd around this product and gain a lot of knowledge about what we need to do to bring this product to market.
Well, tell us a little bit about the product itself.
So Capture, the simplest way that we described it is that it's an audio recording wristband that allows you to easily save and share what someone just said. So it's on a 60-second loop recording, and at any moment you decide what you just heard was awesome for whatever reason, you just simply tap your wrist and you have that moment saved. And seconds later, it's on your phone, where you use our mobile app to edit the duration, add a photo, some context to it with titles and tags, and then you can share it to Facebook and Twitter, email, text, whatever you want to do with the file. It's yours.
So as I understand your product, it's continuously recording, but you actually have to tap it to save that recording for the last 60 seconds?
Not everything we say is all that interesting. I mean, we say a lot of things throughout the course of the day. So it's listening, it's prepared, and it's caching and it's deleting if you go by a moment in time and you say, well, that was just ordinary. So really looking for the things that happen in your day-to-day life that you want to save for some reason or another. It's the human interaction and you saying, hey, that was different. And then, yeah, with one single tap, then you signal that event happened, and then all the other things come afterwards where you would, you know, potentially share it and edit the file.
Who's your competition? I mean, what are there products that compete in this marketplace?
One of the largest ones is just wrist real estate. If you're wearing our product, that means you can't be wearing a regular watch. Or there's other things out there in the wearable technology space, like Nike Fuel Bands, those athletic monitoring devices. A lot of buzz are out there right now on smart watches. I would assume people are not going to wear multiple. So we're competing at which benefit space is someone really after.
Are you worried about people using this to really harm other people or bring negative reactions, I guess?
We've had a lot of reaction. So in particular, the Kickstarter, there's a lot of back and forth, which is one of the main benefits of doing a Kickstarter campaign. You get all that feedback. Great for us is that there wasn't a lot of malicious questions out there. It can happen. It can happen in any scenario. People will be malicious and no matter what, you know, they'll find a way to do it if that's what they're really into or what they're really looking to accomplish.
And if people want to learn more about Capture and the product and mm-hmm. learn about the company, where can they get that information?
You can just visit our website at captureaudio.com, and that's Capture with a K.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Matthew Dooley and Mike Sarrow. These gentlemen are co-founders of Capture, which is a company that's producing a product. You call yourselves a product company. You're not a technology company. Maybe you can clarify why that is distinguished.
We're in the category that has a lot of technology in it. It's a wearable technology category. But, you know, that's not what excites us. It's the consumer use of a physical piece of clothing that they're going to wear. This is jewelry, and this is something that they have to wear every single day. And we're designing it to be something that they will wear every single day.
Mike, you came from a Procter & Gamble background, very involved in building brands like Tide and Pampers and Crest. And so the whole concept of a product, a consumer-type product, that's kind of your background. And Matthew, you're in the social media agency marketing. You also are a social media professor at Xavier. And so you've combined your talents and your resources, both of you, to go off into this entrepreneurial world down at Centrifuge. How has that been, especially you, Mike, going from a big Procter & Gamble corporate environment to very entrepreneurial space?
You kind of do what you know. So we really had passion for consumer products, you know, and so that came naturally to us. But What we didn't realize is that we needed to be very clear about the vision that we had. Otherwise, you'd get frustrated very early and you would probably give up. There's 100 no's for every yes. I mean, it's a common thing and it's happened to us. You know, people just don't understand what you're going after. This is something very new. It doesn't exist today.
So how do you pick yourself up? Because that happens to a lot of people. A lot of people don't like being told no. How do you get past that every day and stay focused on your vision and your dream?
I think what's kept us going strong and overcoming those battles is that we've settled on this vision and we believe in this product and we still don't see it out there in the market.
When is the launch?
The scheduled delivery date is March of 2014.
Again, just maybe you can share what people will be able to do with it, how they will use it.
So our device is an audio recording wristband, and it allows you to save and share the awesome conversations that you have throughout a course of a day, and you get to define what awesome is. And so our product continuously buffers the last 60 seconds of your conversation, and then when you're ready, if you feel that a moment has kind of passed the test for you, you can tap the product one time, and that previous 60 seconds is then downloaded to your smartphone where you can do things like edit it and tag it and share it out to Facebook or Twitter if you want. Or, you know, some of these things are just personal moments and you can save them for yourself. And so that's that benefit space we have not seen out there in the market. And it's really this sense of not having to try to translate. You don't have to go back and say, oh, you should have heard what Bob said. You can actually play them what Bob said. And Bob, a lot of the times, this fictitious Bob guy, is going to take that as a compliment, because you're going to be there with Bob and you're going to say, what you just said was funny, or what you just said was interesting. And so it's that compliment that we're really after.
Well, you all will have to come back and share Capture once it's launched. I'm very excited to see how this turns out for you. And stay tuned, right? Just stay tuned. And if folks now would like to learn more about the product and about the company, how can they get that information?
Yeah, simply visit our website at captureaudio.com, and that's Capture with a K. And you can also follow our updates on Facebook and Twitter.
Thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Pat Longo. Pat is the director of the Hamilton County Business Center. You have been responsible, in my mind at least, in large part, for the success of so many companies, creating so much economic activity and jobs right here in our region. But now the Business Center is really expanding outside of our Cincinnati borders.
Yeah, I mean, we've been on a really neat launch pad for a lot of different types of companies. You know, when I started in this position 17 years ago, really we're just being talked about. Now we're starting to see it. You know, everybody's got a cell phone. When I was starting in the mid-90s, yeah, they were around, but they weren't
very large, right?
Yeah, they were very large with very big wires right. And that sort of thing. But yeah, you're starting to see communities attracting entrepreneurs, and I think Cincinnati is positioning itself to do that.
Do you think you're attracting them partly because of the success you've had with some of the people who have gone through your incubator?
You find out entrepreneurs do a lot of research via the internet. So we spend a lot of time. You think that it's, oh, let's put up a website. Yeah, we're doing more with social media than we've ever done before. I've leveraged LinkedIn greatly. I mean, the number of people that follow us are well over a couple thousand people on different areas like Twitter and LinkedIn. Those are great tools, but people are really doing their research on what's going on with you and what ties do you have to the community.
And what kind of companies are you attracting and the success of those? And you have some pretty good stories. Maybe you can share a few of your success stories.
Our three latest graduates, we're pretty excited about this. We had a little video company called 779. They actually just moved down to Over the Rhine. They wanted to be where there's a lot of the art folk in the area. Another one of our companies is CyberVice. You get people that build websites. They're actually one that kind of corrects and updates websites. Starts out as one person, graduates as five, moves to Northside. So all of a sudden, City of Cincinnati lands two of our last three. Mm-hmm. And then we had a very big one. We actually had somebody that graduated from the incubator in 2006. And we held on to them for a little bit longer as a anchor tenant. They help us make, you know, match dollars for the state of Ohio and other things that help us cash flow. But they were called Edigent Technologies, and they work with data mining and sensors. Well, they just moved into 11,000 square feet of space, have 26 employees in the city of Norwood. So think about that. I mean, the three latest people to move out of the incubator total close to 40 jobs. If I tally up their revenues, they're probably close to $4 million. And when they started, they were all zeros.
The work that you guys have done over there is really a testament, I think, to yourself and to David Main, who really did create the Hamilton County Development Company many years ago.
Yeah, David's done a great job being a leader and positioning us to be doers. You know, we're not ones that are huge on tooting our horn. Yes, we're on the radio, you know, today, but we really spend a lot of time with our clients, you know, and we're still attracting good people that are coming through the doors. One of the neat phenomenons that's going on is this 3D printing. We're going to be opening up probably towards the end of November a 3D printing shop at the incubator that's going to have not one type of technology, but three or four types of technology, which we think is very, very cool. And the name of that company is Interactive 3DP.
People listening today who may have an idea, be looking to start a company, whether they're here in Cincinnati or maybe somewhere else, they're welcome to come and talk to you, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. Our doors are open. You know, if somebody wants to grow a company, we think we have the right environment for someone to grow and enhance their business.
And your website is?
www.hcdc.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Pat Longo. Pat is the director of the Hamilton County Business Center, and I know that you've been involved with almost 200 entrepreneurial entities. You know, when we visit colleges and look at different colleges, we see all these entrepreneurship programs that they have. And I guess one question I always have is, are you born as an entrepreneur? Do you have to have some kind of instinct, or is that something that can be taught? What's your point of view on that?
I think it can go both ways. I mean, it can be learned. You can learn from your environment. You can learn from a classroom. But it's what you learn from the marketplace, which is most important. If you have it in your family genes, does that make you a better entrepreneur? No. I mean, we've seen a lot of first generation move to second generation that doesn't always occur. We've also seen a lot of people where, you know, the parents, one's a school teacher and one's in business, whoever that is, and then the son or daughter grows up to run a multi-million dollar venture. I think what it is paying attention to what's going on in the marketplace. But what I like about what the colleges and high schools are doing in the region is they're spending time learning, what does it mean to be in business? What does it mean to plan? What does it mean to ask questions? What does it mean to communicate? How do I get up in front of somebody and speak? I think it's funny that we do all this hand texting and with our smartphones, but you know, none of my companies at HCBC have ever gotten any dollars because of how well they text. It's how well they communicate and even better, how well they connect to the marketplace. Relationships are key, and seeing people that, hey, maybe you had a friend in high school that can help you or hook you up, or a friend from college, or a friend of a friend, or using some of the social media tools to make connections. You know, I think the thing is being bold, but also being able to do something that I think is very critical, and that is listen. You ask a question, pause, listen to what feedback comes in, and ask that question to multiple sources so you get multiple inputs or feedback.
To your question about whether it's born or can be learned, I do think some of the traits and attributes probably are born in you. But if you need to listen more, I think you can make yourself listen more. If you need to step out of your comfort zone, push yourself out to the limits a bit, get uncomfortable, you can do that with practice.
Oh, sure. And we're going to find out quickly if somebody's got it. You know, the market's going to tell them. There's this word out there called pivot. You know, it's kind of an interesting word. Hey, I was going in one direction. It wasn't working, so I had to pivot and go in another direction. There's nothing wrong with that. It's really what that pivot's based on is what's important.
And figure it out fast, right? Like you said, I mean, if you're going to make a mistake, fail early so you can take action and correct that so you can be successful faster.
Yeah, you want to grow fast, but you want to learn fast too. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this fail fast. Make the connection that this isn't working, so how do I shut that down? As much as I talk about success, and you know, we're batting between 60 and 65% of our companies succeed, 30 to 35% of them are not. So we're also winding people down. So we learn that quickly. So that's an effective tool that allows hopefully someone to either move on to their next job or their next opportunity quickly.
As Tom mentioned, you've had about 200 people come through the doors. How many are in the business?
We got 52 companies right now that employ about a little over 200 folks. Mm-hmm. And last year, in the last 12 months, we did economic impact. They generated a little over $17 million worth of revenue, and they gathered from other people, whether that be banks or angels or venture capital or the federal government through the Small Business Innovative Research, almost $9 million worth of other people's money to help them grow mm-hmm. their venture and prove concepts.
Pat, if people would like to learn more, come take a visit, see what's going on at the Business Center. What is your website?
Yeah, please feel free to visit us at www.hcdc.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.